Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new president. Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of
come on.
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Connecticut.
Took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive. The calling number is 929-477-2759. We got you locked and loaded for the next 90 minutes or so here in the kitchen. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with Sports City. I must apologize. Sports City been going through a lot, had to get a little time away from the kitchen. And thankful for all of the fellas that's been holding it down in Sports City as much as possible, from the new baseball buffet and all of the rant, the raves that they've been getting. And to the villain himself, even though that's my arch nemesis, I've been holding it down as much as possible without me being around. So I'll apologize myself towards Sports City, going through a lot of these issues and things that's been coming in front of me. But the show must go on. I'm back here in the brunch. A lot of stuff went down at least throughout this weekend and this week. And upcoming, we do have a draft coming up soon. So there's a lot of stuff swirling around in all different aspects of sports, to say the least bit. I do have a lot of stuff, like I said, from, you know, football, especially basketball. I want to run through a lot of these games that took place yesterday, of what we think about are the games that are going to take place today, a possible return as of today also, too. So that should be pretty much interesting also. It's getting pretty hot, especially in the NBA as we approach the month of May. Playoffs are around the corner, and a lot of people are fighting for playoff positioning. And, of course, I live in the tri-state area, so I will be jumping into a lot of the talk around here. And it's not even just around here. So it's across the nation, and I know a lot of people in the area where I'm at now are just loving that people are talking about them. I do have somebody here, actually, calling out of the 970. Welcome to the brunch. How are you, Big Easy?
I am doing great, Timeless. Glad you are back and excited to talk some sports with you today, my friend.
Okay, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but I'll just talk about it. And if you want to elaborate on it after 10, but I doubt if you saw it. It was the fight last night, part two of Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal. And the first fight, a lot of people were mad because there was a lot of more, you know, grappling. And I don't even want to say more grappling. It was more of a hold. And these guys are like kind of ballroom dancing, if you will. And people were getting mad. Oh, Usman is just doing a lot of leg kicking and stepping on his feet and not really fighting. And he won the fight, you know, and a lot of people wanted to see the rematch. Well, Masvidal's had a couple of fights since. Usman has not fought, I think, since he's fought in Masvidal. And, no, actually he beat Colby. I'm actually telling the fib. He actually beat Colby Covington, who's actually a friend and a training friend of Jorge Masvidal. But anyway, to get into the rematch, the first round starts and Usman is off to a good start, basically controlling the round, ends up winning the round, doing more damage toward Masvidal than what Masvidal was able to bring to Usman. Now, the famous second round that everybody is talking about, if you've not seen it, please YouTube it. because this is crucial on what happened in this fight. Well, it isn't, not even what happened. This is how the fight ends. And they're in the midst of things, and Usman throws up, I want to say a 1-2, but the one that he throws is like a jab that went around Jorge's front or his back blocking hand, which pulls it down so it disturbs him, and he throws a right hook right on the button so hard, you see Masvidal's body go dead. Like he fell straight to sleep, and as soon as, and you literally see it, as soon as he hit the ground, he woke up. He's out cold when he gets hit. When he hits the ground, he wakes up, and it's like he's trying to block. And the first two shots didn't really land hard as soon as he hit the ground. But, like, the third, fourth, and fifth, it was just straight hammer punches. And after the fifth one, he was out cold. And there's no questioning this time on what Masvidal was able to try and withstand what Usman was bringing to him. Usman made it clear that he was the better fighter, and you could see the emotion that he had. He was pumped after he knocked him out, but once they, you know, celebrated it with the judge and you had Buffer basically make the call, he started crying. He got emotional. His daughter was there. His mom and dad were there, and I think they're from Africa too. So just having them have the track with him, and then he started talking his stuff. So it was pretty much interesting to see, like, the highs and lows of his emotion and knowing all that he's been through and knowing that he fought him in the state of Florida, which is Masvidal's backyard. He's from Florida. He's from South Beach. So it's interesting that he fought him in Florida, and he's like, yeah, Jacksonville, y'all told me to bring violence, and that's all he said. And the crowd started booing like crazy, but he knocked him out, you know. So excellent fight. And Masvidal, you know, took it on the chin, and not both figuratively and you know, but he spoke well at the end of the fight. He was just basically giving him congrats, saying he's a better man, so on and so forth. But just knowing that, you know, Masvidal is a big talker, and for him to kind of be humble, it's like, wow, like the highs and lows of him as well. But I don't know if you caught any of it, Eric, or seen any of the fight or heard anything about it, but your thoughts on part two between Usman and Masvidal in the UFC fight.
Yeah, you know, Timeless, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch it, saw the highlights and stuff. So, yeah, you know, the better fighter won convincingly now, so there shouldn't be, you know, it's not tainted. And like you just touched on, what I really like, because I was reading on it, of the sportsmanship that we saw after the fight and, you know, the emotion that these fighters put into this, you know, so it's cool to see that. It was really good to see that at the end of the fight, these two guys show respect for each other, you know, and then the crowd booing him, you know, they should have been happy for a good fight, you know, but it is what it is. So he won right there in his backyard. So hats off to Usman, man.
So definitely. And the reason why I'm like celebrating Usman is not 2020, but 2019, he had a fight. That was when he fought Colby Covington, and I was there. That was my birthday night in Vegas. So after he won the fight, I was kicking it with him all night long in VIP because of the people I'm in sync with. And he's a great guy. Like, not even – I can't even undersell it. Like, we were dancing and everything together. Everything was cool. Like, me, him, and his brothers and the crew that we were around, it was great to, like, get to meet him. So – I feel like differently about watching this guy, like, be a champion and doing what he's doing right now. Like, I know a champ. Like, so it's great to just, like, be in those scenarios. That's why I'm kind of more celebrating it. Now, a more nastier thing, and I'll get away from UFC, and this is disgusting. My God, I don't even believe I saw this. But I remember a few years back, I want to say probably like 7, maybe 5 years back, Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva had a fight. Anderson Silva flicked a front kick at Chris Weidman, and Chris Weidman's, like, knee and shin connected right at the perfect spot on Anderson Silva's leg to where it broke his leg, where he probably had a hairline fracture or something already, and he just needed something specifically to break it. And when Anderson went to step back, his leg wasn't, like, together, so it was broken, and he fell on the ground. And just watching how nasty that happened. And not to say I'm wishing this or saying this word gingerly, so please don't take this the wrong way, and please to karma, which I am going to say, I am not saying this in any malicious form because I am aware of you, but karma came back around for Chris Weidman. So Chris Weidman is in this fight up against Uriah Hall, and he flicks a front kick at Uriah Hall, and Uriah puts his knee down to block it. It breaks his leg instantly at the lower portion. So Weidman doesn't know it's broke, but it's broke. And when he puts it down and step on it, he falls straight to the floor. Even the referee and Uriah Hall, like, walk and run away from him with their hands on their head, like, oh, my goodness, like, how bad this break is. Like, disgusting. And it happens in combat sports, but it's, like, just to watch it happen on TV and so raw, and just looking at how people's extremities could bend or break like that. It comes with the sport, but just watching how that happened was just one terrible situation. Chris, I wish you the best of recovery. Please get well soon. And I know he's older now, so it's like I don't know if he still has a fighting career after this, but Anderson Silva was able to do it. But Anderson Silva, actually, when he came back, I don't want to say he got worse, but he started losing more because I think he was more aware of everything now. And it's an unfortunate situation. So Chris Weidman, or Weidman, I'm saying it correctly. I don't want to butcher your name, but please get well soon. Okay.
Yeah, Timeless, if you don't mind just touching on that real quick. You are exactly right of being aware of that. We see this in all throughout the world of professional sports. You know, when someone gets, a devastating injury, they usually don't come back as they were previous before they were injured because they got that in their head. So it'll be interesting to see how he does rebound for that because, as we all know, the Spider was one of the most dominant fighters that we have ever witnessed in all of UFC and you know, pretty much unbeatable. When he came in to fight, you knew Silva was going to get the win some way or somehow. So, and he came back from that injury and started losing. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and I'm an Anderson Silva fan, so it's like it was stunning because he was off to a run. Like, he was dominating the sport, and then he lost this fight because of his – well, the first time he fought him, he actually let Weidman punch him in his face, and then he ended up getting knocked out. So then the second fight that they had, this is when he did that kick, and it broke his leg, and it was like watching the Anderson Silva have to try to get back into condition and things of that nature, and he ends up being older. He's in his later 30s, going into 40s. Now he's in his, like, mid-40s, I think it is, if I'm not mistaken. And they're thinking about trying to get him a fight, boxing as of now, not even MMA anymore. So I want to see how that ends up panning out. But this is an interesting situation between Uriah Hall and Chris Weidman. It's only went 17 seconds. Like, this was the start of the fight where this happened, and just a nasty break. Nasty break. But see, the one thing that you did say, Eric, was, about the time and days of where we are now and how, you know, medicine and technology are better. So they know how to properly help heal and keep things compacted so it could try and, work itself into its best condition. So hopefully, you know, the hands of medicine and things of like that nature, and they could restructure this leg as best as possible so you come back strong or just be able to walk regularly and step away from the game. Hopefully it's harder than two mended into this, but this is a heavy scenario. If you didn't see the break, it's disgusting. I don't recommend you see it, but you got to see it. Like I don't recommend it. This is one of those, like, make sure your kids are in the bedroom for at least 5 seconds. Just tell them to go close the door and count to 30 and then let them come out. It should be all done, but disgusting break. Oh, my God. Okay. I'm going to get away from that. A lot of other good fights in the UFC, though. I can't take away from a lot of that. But at least those are the two that I feel like have a heavy impact on what happened throughout the day. There were some crucial knockouts as well. From Namajunas had a knockout, and Shevchenko, the female fighter, she had a crucial knockout in the second round also. So I'm going to get into a lot of the scores of the NBA yesterday. And, of course, the first quarter, I'm going to save that for last. Okay, so the first one that I have, the Milwaukee Bucks beat the 76ers 132-94. Now, this is where I stop right here. The Sixers were without Joel Embiid, right? Joel Embiid has now missed 19 games. A lot of people say that it may not be fair that he's still in the MVP contention, but with looking at how the score was, this actually puts me in the mindset of him being an MVP candidate because of how strongly he was missed. In aspects of Philadelphia, Dwight Howard was probably more the impact player, having 12 points and 12 rebounds. Knowing that Joel Embiid will probably bring more to the table scoring, this is probably their lone bright spot in the game. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 24 points, 14 rebounds, and 7 assists, in which the team followed and got stronger and stronger by a quarter, except the second quarter. They came out of a 26-point spark in the first. 24 was the dip in the second quarter and by half, and it gets nastier. The third quarter, they scored 36 points. In the fourth quarter, to close the game, they scored 46 points. In the fourth quarter, you talking about drubbing a team out, let alone the 76ers are one of, if not the, but they're not, because I'm looking at record-wise, I think Brooklyn is in first. One of the best teams in the Eastern Conference giving up 50 points in the fourth, where it's supposed to slow down if the score is out of reach. So you mean to tell me, like, let's just say the Bucks were up 10 or 20, like you couldn't stop them when they were probably just jacking up threes to make it look like, you know, we're going to do this respectable, because you don't want them going to the lane and getting layups on you, because then it looks like they're running the score up. They were killing them this bad. So I have my issues with Philly still. A lot of people have a lot of fingers to point at Brooklyn, but until Philly can prove to me that they can win away from the state of Pennsylvania or playing out of South Philadelphia, I have my issues still with the 76ers. Eric, your thoughts on this game? The Milwaukee Bucks clearly outplayed them, did whatever was necessary to get the Sixers out of there early. Your thoughts on this matchup with the Bucks versus Sixers?
It reminded me of a feeding frenzy, Timeless. Just absolutely devoured out there. And I am going to say, I was one of the people that are pretty high on the 76ers and have them favored to go all the way to the NBA Finals in the East. But what you just touched on is the key. It's been a while now, and, you know, they can't hide it. They have to figure out how they're going to win out of the state of Pennsylvania, because in the playoffs, you have to win on the road. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, and it's concerning. It's concerning to get beat that bad. That shows that there's some glaring holes going on out there in your fundamentals. When you're getting beat that bad, you're either giving up or you're not playing basketball the way you should. So it is concerning right now for the 76ers. So I'd like to see what happens here. They are going to have to find a way to win on the road, exactly like you said.
So they lost that fourth quarter by 15. They lost the third quarter by 13.
Yeah.
To 28, they lost by 38, so they're still down 10. So they lost every quarter. It got worse and worse and worse. The score total, the Bucks clearly outplayed them. And knowing the Bucks are a playoff caliber team, the upper half or the top heavy of the Eastern Conference, I'm concerned that the Sixers aren't ready. They may make it interesting in the playoffs. They may get out of their first round. The second round is where it probably may get questionable. If they get to an Eastern Conference final, I don't feel like they're strong enough to get it done. Like, their shooters are Danny Green and Seth Curry, where Seth Curry can hit shots. But if anybody, and I'm actually calling Seth Curry out, and not to just do it just to do it, I'm telling the truth. If you force Seth Curry to dribble, you're better, your percentage is raised. If you make him, like, have to go to the rim or do something like that, like, you don't let him catch and shoot because he's a Curry, period. He's going to hit. But force him to dribble. Get him off of his feet. Like, make him do what he needs to do. You take a gun away from the Sixers. If Simmons isn't going to shoot, and Simmons was out, you know, so Simmons wasn't there, so a lot of that's there also with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons being out. But still, this score, that's a high total. That's damn near. They almost lost by 40. They're 2 points from losing for 40. I don't care what's happening. If they're top of the Eastern Conference, they should be able to play respectively better, because that's like if Embiid or Simmons gets in foul trouble in critical games, they're done. This is what you're telling me. Danny Green is not himself. Danny Green is out here collecting checks because he is a NBA championship caliber player, because he's been from the Spurs and the Lakers and the Raptors. He's won rings in several different locations, so he gets that deep, you know, that good deed or goodwill while he's out there on the floor. But he's not hitting shots as we knew him from before. So the shooting has to raise in Philadelphia. Defense definitely is an issue by them losing by 40. This is 40. I don't care if it's 38. It's 40 to me. That's a 40-point blowout. And they know that this is a rival. The Bucks are a rival of the Sixers. They have to get amped up just as much as possible. And I'm sorry, but a lot of people may get mad at what I'm about to say. Doc Rivers, go back to the drawing board. Go back to the drawing board. You got to figure something out, because it's every single year outside of the year in Boston where you won the championship. What was that, 2009 when they beat the Lakers? Yeah, 2009? No, 2008.
Yep. 2008.
Beat the Lakers. After that, it's like you get to the playoffs and fall short. Something goes wrong and you fall short, or an injury may happen and you can't patch that up. It should be able to be the next man up. They give you so many Coach of the Year acclamations and things of that nature. You need to figure this out, because you are a tougher and higher caliber coach. So I'm going to stick this where it needs to land. You're the head of the snake. Make this work. It can't just be because of the injuries are there that you're going to have an excuse and then try to blame the referees. Enough is enough. Enough is enough. I'm calling Doc Rivers out. And, yeah, you are a good coach, but it can't continue to happen like this. If Philly falls asleep and loses this year in the playoffs, what? Do they look at you and be like, oh, it's his first year in Philadelphia? Yeah, I mean, they were at the top of the conference, but the question was, can they win away from Philly? Like, and that question still remains. And this has been here for years now, for years, before you got here. And you're not changing the mantra either. I could continue to go on about this situation, because I was so tired of hearing about Philly, and the people that I'm around are Philly fans now too. So it's like, okay, so now that you guys are Philly fans and they're sitting atop the Eastern Conference, there's no stopping them. And they're looking at this type of loss. It's like, if Embiid is to draw like two charges and he's out, this is what could potentially happen if they're playing a strong team. I had to say that. Okay, I'm going to get away from this because I will spend a lot of time talking about this. The next matchup I have is the Pistons going up against the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers win this matchup 115-109, in which – in a losing effort, Mason Plumlee has a 17-point, 21-rebound effort with 5 assists. And on the Pacers side of the ball, Malcolm Brogdon goes off with 26, 8 rebounds and 4 assists, in which I've had an argument here before about Malcolm Brogdon not being the piece here. Well, he led the team yesterday up against the Pistons, even though it's the Pistons, but they did what they needed to do to stay relevant, to try to chase at least a play-in spot. Easy, your thoughts on this one with the Pacers winning up against the Pistons? This is a game that they had to win. They couldn't let this one slip by, especially being in the field house in Indiana. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Brogdon's back, and we have talked, about this for a little bit on the show, and had debates with people about his caliber. And this guy is a superstar in this league. He is the 1-2 punch, him and Sabonis, so... it's good to see the Sixers getting back into things. This is a team that we all know that can this team could potentially do some damage in the playoffs. They could be they have that shock value, they have the depth, and if they're firing on all cylinders, this can be a dangerous team in the playoffs. So we'll see how they're all gelling together now. We're coming down the final stretch, getting ready to go. So if they continue it, they'll get in, and we'll see what happens. So, but I'm looking forward to seeing this team play in the playoffs. They're going to shock some people. Maybe even the 76ers. Because this is a team, the way the Sixers are playing, Timeless, that could beat the Sixers in a 7-game series, in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about that, but, that's what I'm seeing.
Well, it's interesting because the Pacers, I don't think they want to make the playoffs, because they're so injured. They have a lot of injuries, and let alone Caris LeVert just got there, and he's trying to work himself back in a game shape. It's like, I wouldn't want to put him in a situation where he has to exert that much energy. And my question is remaining on Sabonis. Like, Sabonis is an all-star player, but they need more out of him. He needs to dominate the game more, and I don't think the Pacers are ready to go into a playoff where everybody's hungry. It would be interesting to see the Pacers in the Sixers matchup if they could win a play-in game if they're there, but I think the Sixers would drop them out easily. I think Sabonis would be overmatched trying to deal with Embiid, especially if Embiid was focused. So especially with this loss right here that we just spoke about, the Sixers may be on a tear once they get back to full strength. So I don't want to run into them being an eighth seed or one of these ninth or tenth being a play-in spot, trying to get one of these last spots, trying to end up playing up against the Sixers team. But this is a game the Pacers had to win to try and stay in the hunt. They are three games under 500. It'd be a hard-pressed situation for the Pacers to try and get into the postseason and try to perform well up against a higher-quality team within the Eastern Conference. It's a questionable situation, but they had to win the game. So speaking about other teams that are in the play-in situation, with the Chicago Bulls being one of them, they lose their matchup to the Miami Heat in South Beach, 106-101, in a losing effort, as always. I love this guy. I'm just mad that he's getting the teams that just don't help him. Nikola Vucevic goes off with 26-14 with 6 assists at the center position. It's ridiculous. And Bam Adebayo has a 20-point night, 6 rebounds and 10 assists in a winning effort for the Miami Heat. Evie, your thoughts on this situation with the Heat winning this one, remaining relevant in the top half of the Eastern Conference chase for the postseason. And the Bulls were or are trying to chase after that play-in spot, but I feel like they're clearly slowly falling away from that and may end up playing themselves out of that more or less for draft positioning. Your thoughts on this matchup and the direction of both of these teams?
You know, Timeless, we talked on a show last week, and we all had a discussion about this, about what are the Miami Heat doing. And they're kind of staying afloat. People have written this team out, and this is a team that is removed from going to the NBA Finals. This is a team that still has their pieces together from that team and got a few others along the way. So, bringing in Trevor Ariza, good veteran presence for down the stretch. Duncan Robinson's playing great right now, Kendrick Nunn. And they obviously have Iguodala, too. We all know his veteran presence, a proven winner and champion in this league. And it's just up to Jimmy Butler and Adebayo, man, to lead this team where it needs to go. So it's good to see them get this win. They're definitely going to be in the playoffs, and this is a team that could be a sleeper as well. People already counting them out. This team could go very easily, Timeless. This team could be back in the NBA Finals this year. They match up well against anybody in a 7-game series. They have that experience. They're well coached. So I think the Heat are on the up climb right now, and we're going to see them getting ready to go into the playoffs with this good momentum.
I don't know if the NBA Final ready, but it'd be interesting to see them make a push or see how far they can go, let alone how they are seated. They're seventh in the East right now. They are lined up to play the Hornets if it's a play-in game, in which the Hornets are lined up to end up getting LaMelo back. So if LaMelo gets back and he's able to help them be impactful, because they're only a game under 500, I'm still high on LaMelo Ball. I feel like still rookie of the year. He had an unfortunate break, but if Anthony Edwards picks it up, then I think he'll end up getting it. But I still think this is LaMelo's to have, especially while they're playoff relevant, at least in the eighth seed.
Absolutely.
Falling because he's not there, If the Heat lose that game, it's an unfortunate situation. So we'll see. They actually got by the Bulls, winning by 5. The Bulls are now in 11th seed, falling out of this. I still feel like they can get back in there, because I don't know what the Pacers are going to look like. The Wizards are actually playing well themselves to be a 10th seed right now. But we'll see how this all works out. So I do want to get away from that game, because I clearly feel like the Bulls are, a mix because of the moves that they made. Their injuries are stacking up against them. Are they not really having LaVine and them on the floor as much as they need to? The next matchup I have are the San Antonio Spurs, a team that I've been talking a lot of junk about. Pulled this win off in New Orleans, beating the Pelicans by 2 points, 110-108, in a winning effort. DeMar DeRozan goes off for 32.7 rebounds and six assists. No, that's eight. Okay, so that's eight assists. And in a losing effort, Zion Williamson goes off for 33 points, 14 rebounds, and two assists. Eric, before you get into it, I'm going to just say this. I got into a really big argument last night in a show or a group of people that I'm with, and somebody was picking on Zion, right? And as people know, I'm a big Zion fan. I'm not going to lie. I'm a diehard Zion fan. His gripe or debate was Zion can do more on the rebounding side, right? So as we have, Zion had a double-double, 13-14, right? Zion's averaging seven rebounds a game, right? His argument was Zion needs to average eight rebounds a game. So you're telling me that if he's averaging seven, eight is a rebound more, and you're mad at that. And I'm like, there's at least three people on that team that rebound outside of him. Him getting 10 rebounds, to me, and Lord, I'm going to knock on wood, and please forgive me if I'm saying the wrong thing, you're going to have this super high jumping dude in the air, in the paint, around at least six people where there could be a risk of him rolling his ankle. And not saying I'm wishing that or anything, but everybody's down there. He can get rebounds when he needs to get the rebound. Like that for him to complain about one rebound, and it was like just going back and forth with this individual, it's like, wait, come on. And let alone he's on the doggone Pelicans where it's clogged up in the paint. Steven Adams isn't doing anything other than rebounding. Like, he brings nothing to the game scoring-wise. Like, what they were able to do with him in OKC, they, like, made it special for him to, like, throw hook shots up or screen a roll so Russell can throw him an alley-oop to dunk or whichever guard was there to set the table for him to finish at the rim. Like, you're putting him in a situation where everybody's learning, especially Stan Van Gundy's system. But your thoughts on what I just mentioned about the individual, but also the game with the Spurs winning this game by two up against the Pelicans.
Yeah, you know what, Timeless, that's that glue talk we talk about. Like, are you kidding me? Well, you're worried about one more rebound? And Zion is – this guy is the offense. You know what I mean? Him getting 14 rebounds like you did last night, that's a huge bonus. Like you said, you have Adams in there that could be getting rebounds. You don't want him to be a rebounder. He's not Dennis Rodman. You know, you have your rebounders, your guys that get in there, go to the paint, fight for that rebound. Williamson is definitely not one of those guys, just because what you just said. You do not want to risk injury to get a rebound. I mean, come on. This guy is the offense. He's the face of the franchise. And, you know, he's been facilitating, too, of late. I mean, this guy's shown that he could play the point guard position if he had to. So Zion Williamson is going to be one of the – I mean, he's going to be the face of the NBA in my eyes. This guy's going to be – he's right up there with Shaq. We haven't seen the potential of a player to be that dominant since Shaq. So, and now he's healthy, and he's starting to play like that. So, yeah, worried about averaging eight rebounds a game. That's lunacy, man. There's no reason for it. That's he's not the rebounder. So you don't need to worry about that. The scorer. He's the guy that is the offense generator for this team. That's what he's about. And to say that he needs to average one more rebound a game, that's ridiculous in my eyes. So, and I did want to touch on, too, because we talked about this, and I'm kind of eating my words. I'm happy for him. I was never hating on him, but, you know, worried about this guy being a bust, being picked number two. I got to give my props to Lonzo Ball. He's been playing great lately, and I'm really excited for him. So, and, you know, I'm going to throw this out there, too. If Dennis Schroeder doesn't decide to, come back, because there's been talks about Lonzo Ball, this being his last year in New Orleans, if I'm the Lakers, I'd welcome him back with open arms.
Wow, and that would be interesting if they were to go back and get Lonzo Ball and bring him back to L.A. You being a Laker fan, how would you feel about that, bringing him back to L.A.? Like, would they be receptive to him? I mean, knowing he's a Cali guy and the way that they, you know, basically booted him out of that organization, I don't mean that in any light way, because they wanted to see Lonzo gone because his confidence was shot. But I think he went to New Orleans to, you know, not only get confidence but be around a big guy in Zion. and being able to lob that ball from half court and watch somebody finish at the rim is big. But, I mean, your thoughts being a Laker guy?
Yeah, you know, I think the fans would definitely welcome back with open arms. LeBron James is solely the reason for that. You know, as soon as he got to L.A., I was very excited, Timeless. We had Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram. We have two cornerstone rookies here that could be the face of our franchise. Really good players, and he came in there and kind of threw a fit and destroyed the confidence. You know, Josh Hart, all these guys said they were like on eggshells and they didn't feel appreciated. LeBron James wanted them out of there. And, getting Anthony Davis, but I really, and that's why I was concerned, like, oh, if Anthony Davis does not re-sign with the Lakers, this will go down as one of the worst trades in NBA history because you give away your cornerstone of your franchise, key pieces, and all kinds of draft picks. So they went all in, and that was basically LeBron James. So, and Lonzo Ball has his confidence back. The only question will be getting back there with LeBron, him being able to, like, put all that aside, that personal, you know, vendetta or not, you know, animosity, I should say, not a vendetta, but animosity, like, this guy didn't want me on his team. And now I'm back here. If they're going to be able to form the chemistry and gel. But I think it'd be great, man. I think Lonzo would fit in great there as the point guard running the show, facilitating. And he wouldn't need to score, you know, 20 points a game. His main thing would just be facilitating, and then putting up 15 points a game would be a great thing for him to be doing. So he's lights out with his three-point shooting right now. He's just gotten better in every aspect of the game, so, and I'm happy to see that because I was a big Lonzo Ball supporter, and the only reason, I was saying we're talking about just the high picks. That's the only reason, like, you know, people get categories. So if you're pick number two, you're supposed to be a face of the franchise. So, but I'm very excited, and I think just like the rest of the Lakers fans, we would welcome him back with open arms because it was LeBron James who pushed him out. And LeBron has done a lot of questionable things like that, scoring the 10 points, getting out of the game so he can have that record. LeBron James will never be, he's never going to be one of the top Lakers ever. It doesn't matter if they go on a run and win three championships. LeBron James is never going to be, he's not going to be on the Mount Rushmore in Lakerville. It's just never going to happen. There are so many other players that embodied the Laker way, and he's just, he's me, you know, everything for LeBron James. It's all a glory hound for him. Like, I got mad when he did that Kobe speech, and he's like, yeah, basically said, this is my team now, and I'm going to carry off where you left off. It's like, you're never, ever going to fill those shoes. It doesn't matter what you do. You're never going to be in the same category of Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Elgin Baylor, Gail Goodrich, Jerry West, the list goes on, you know, and he's never going to be on that level, and I'm not the only Laker fan that thinks like this. This is an overwhelming consensus in that, you know, he's not going to be that guy. Yeah, we're going to be appreciative. He won some championships, but he is never going to be that.
So let's, and I don't want to see this happen, but I got to kind of say it. So if LeBron wins another championship, right, let's just say he gets, and I don't know if it'll be back-to-back, right, but let's just say this year is a definite situation for him to win a championship. But if he brings another championship, still not in the discussion with at least in Lakerville, not just as him as a player, because, of course, to me, I think he's a top five player all time. But as a Laker Laker player, like, who would I compare him to? Like, you don't put him in the Kobe light? You don't – like I actually said Big Game James, like, just to be funny, like, just to start a fight. But I still love James Worthy as a player. Like, just the way James played ball, like – and I still have the leg up of Kareem and Magic over him, but a lot of people give him the leg up over Kareem and Magic as an overall player. But me, that's the basketball I grew up watching. Like, watching the old Mike or watching Magic and Kareem and getting in trouble because I'm five, 6 years old trying to watch the Lake Show late play ball because I just love basketball so much. But he'll never get there. We do have callers in queue. I do want to bring here the people that are there. Just listening, press one if you want to get involved also.
Yeah, Timeless, and like I just said, he's never going to be there. Look at Big Game, won four championships, was on that Lake Show team, embodied the Laker lifestyle, man. LeBron basically came to L.A. He saw, okay, Kobe's gone. I can come to arguably one of the greatest sports franchises in all of professional sports, you know what I mean? So, again, it's for him. Look at me. I'm now the king of the Lakers. Of course he may get his jersey retired, but you got to look at the thing. He was there. He's going to be with the Lakers maybe 5 years max, depending on. I mean, he's talking a big game that he'll play like into his 40s if his body allows it, which we'll see. But will he be a Laker that whole time? That's remains to be seen. So he's definitely going to be. I mean, yeah, he got us a couple championships, but he's never going to be on that level of those guys you just mentioned in my eyes. I mean, come on. I mean, player-wise, you can debate that all day long, but as a Laker, there's no debating it. These guys were in a sense, purple and gold for life and still are. All these guys are still involved with the organization. Big Game James does the pregame show. You know, he's an analysis for him. Magic Johnson always has his hands in there, even though he's, you know, stepped away. He still has his hand in there. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is a fixture going to every game, you know, when he's healthy. He's always there. So this is a way of life, not just a, look at me, here I am type deal. And he has not embodied that. That was a huge and we talked about it, Timeless. You're really upset about it, too. Come on. I mean, he, instead of going and helping the team, let's go out there and help the team win. I'm going to be out there until I get this shot so I can keep my streak going, and then I'm going to take myself out of the game. I mean, come on. Would Magic do that? Would Kobe do that? Would Kareem do that? Would any of these other guys do that? Absolutely not. They would be in it to win it, not for their personal accolades.
Okay, we do have people in queue called in. I think you might have set the brunch on fire. Calling in from the 469 area code, what's your name and what's on your mind this morning?
Hey, what's up, Todd? This is Alasia from Houston, Texas. I will say that I do agree with I'm sorry I don't know his name, but I do agree that LeBron won't ever, like, have win over L.A., but it's all right. We got y'all shook.
Okay, so his name is Eric, or his nickname is Big Easy. It's interesting, right, because a lot of Laker fans aren't going to be receptive to him ever since he's gotten there and, you know, the murals that were painted around town and he brought the championship. It's like, you know, people are thankful for their team winning, but it's like if he falls short this season due to Boo Birds come back out, and it's like, how many championships is he going to have to attain to turn over the thoughts or the minds alike across the board for a Laker fan or an ideal person out in California who's followed the likes of Kareem from the 70s coming into the 80s or Magic since Magic got there in the 80s? You know, like what is it going to take?
I don't know, man. I think, like, people just, I don't know, I guess the effect that those people had is different than what LeBron would have because he just got there. He didn't, like, grow there. He already grown, so it's just different.
Fair enough.
And all these other key Lakers that I mentioned, like Elgin Baylor, Jamal Wilkes, Gale Goodrich, Jerry West, Will Chamberlain, all these guys – were a staple there for a long time. All these players were 7-plus year players for the Lakers organization.
Okay, we do have another caller in queue calling out of the 615. Welcome to the brunch. What's your name? What's on your mind today?
Hey, you guys can hear me?
615.
So I'm Mike. I'm calling out of Iowa right now. How you guys doing?
How you doing, Mike?
I'm good. What's on my mind? I mean, man, I don't know if LeBron can win enough championships for some guys like my man here who's been talking to be accepting. But I do want to take a little bit of issue with some of what he said. We can point to a couple of instances, but LeBron James has, for the most part, made every team he was on better and done a decent job elevating the players that were around him in his career. A few exceptions here and there, for sure, but LeBron James has been a consummate winner. I mean, and I understand that the East has been a little bit different over the last several years, but it's just been – just look at it. Like, you hadn't had a team or one man go to the finals that many years in a row and have his team competing for championships year in and year out. I mean, I honestly think that a little bit over the top, too, with – I understand that they had to do what they had to do to get Anthony Davis. I don't think everybody in Laker Nation wanted to trade Lonzo or wanted to trade Ingram. As a matter of fact, some of them would have loved to have been able to put Kuzma in there. And so I don't know that there's as hard of feelings in some ways, but, I mean, I think a lot of what the man said was is how a lot of people feel. But I think the truth is a little bit less – not quite as blunt.
Okay, so Eric, from what you've heard so far, I mean, what do you think? I mean, it is going to be interesting to see if LeBron could appease the likes of fans like, and this is crazy, Sports City. I must apologize. I'm surrounded by 3 Laker fans, so please help me. I don't know what to do. Like, this is not good. Oh my goodness, this is not good.
You know what? Everything he just said is 100% accurate. By all means, the only thing is, it's going to take LeBron James, in my opinion, Timeless. Even if he wins 3 championships, yeah, you know, his jersey is going to be up there. He is going to be on the. I mean, but the guys I mentioned. I would still, I mean, even Jerry West, man, like, because Kobe Bryant and Magic Johnson are for sure unmovable faces on Lakers Mount Rushmore. And then you can, you know, those guys that I mentioned after that, you can put 2 more on there. And I don't, in my opinion, as a lifelong Laker fan, LeBron James is never going to eclipse those guys for me, ever. LeBron James, yeah, absolutely, one of the greatest basketball players in history. There's no debating that. But when we come to the greatest Lakers of all time, I'm not putting him up there. You know, I'm not. So it's just, he's never going to eclipse because, like I said, it's all these guys that I mentioned, they bled and still do bleed the purple and gold. And it's an organization that plays for championships. You know, Kobe said it the best. Here, you know, when they're talking to him when they lost to Boston, you know, in 2008, he's like, no, we don't have anything to be happy about, because here in Los Angeles, we play for championships. Everything else is a failure. It doesn't matter if we make the playoffs and lose first round. It doesn't matter how many wins we had in a season if we can't get that O'Brien trophy. So, and all these guys just embodied that, I mean, with their mind, body, and soul. And LeBron James, I'm going to say it again, one of the greatest ever. But when we're talking about greatest Lakers ever, I just don't see it. I mean, he would have had to come to the Lakers during the Kobe Bryant era, and he would have to be on the Lakers for 7 to 10 years for me to even consider moving these other pieces around to have him up there. LeBron James, in my eyes, is always going to be the staple of the Cleveland Cavaliers, no matter what he does. You know, he brought that team his first championship. He's a homegrown product, like you just touched on. I mean, when you can go to the finals that many years in a row, I mean, that shows you what type of player you are. And, yes, he does make players around him better. He helps out the whole team. LeBron James is that guy. But he's just a little too on the me side. I'd like to see him let that go and fully embrace in what's best for the team and my teammates. Screw my accolades.
No, he's not saying
let's do what's the best for the team. So we're gonna have to see. But I, as a Laker fan, and I'm speaking for a lot of Laker fans here. I mean, these guys are legendary Lakers. So you know what I mean. I don't see him ever getting to be up there in the conversation with those guys. Now, as a greatest player of all time, absolutely. But just not the greatest Laker.
Let's be honest, though. People said that Kobe was a me guy. And people had that.
Absolutely he was. And he was.
And people had
until
that same
he
thing
changed that. You know, he adapted and changed that and embraced the role. Okay, yeah, I got to be a leader. I got to make everybody around me better. I mean, the team, when he won back-to-back titles, look at that. Like, Paul Gasol, that was the missing piece. And he elevated Paul Gasol's game. He elevated, I mean, you guys had guys like Sasha Vujacic, Radmanovic, that were huge role players during that title run. And just had everybody, Lamar Odom, everybody was just one solid unit. Kobe Bryant was just the dagger, just like how Michael Jordan was with the Bulls. It was the same scenario. Michael Jordan had all these, that people would may call subpar role players, but he made these guys a lot better, and they were able to win championships. And that's what Kobe did.
The second Jordan team were better. Those were much better complete rosters, I think, than the second Kobe team, in my opinion. But I think some of the greats, I mean, you just said the me. I think some of the greats are going to always have that sort of reputation of me in some ways or whatever. And then in some ways, like, I'm kind of an older basketball fan too, but, like, I LeBron didn't realize the class of the organization either until he got there. He said he was impressed by Lakers. But in some ways, man, respectfully, and I mean, I do agree that a lot of Lakers fans feel the way you do, but I feel like this is kind of a get-off-my-lawn mentality in some ways.
I'm not going to necessarily say that because, my mom's a diehard Lakers fan, and when it was ironic enough because when LeBron went back to Cleveland and, you know, his time was kind of running down there, I told her 3 years before LeBron got to L.A., I was like, I bet you LeBron James is going to end up a Laker before his career is over. I can almost guarantee it. Kobe's time is winding down. They're going to need a new star, and I think LeBron James is going to embrace that, which, Magic Johnson and him made that happen. And the Lakers historically have always had, top five players in their organization at any given era. You can go back and look at this. So it wasn't a surprise to me. I'm happy. I welcomed him with open arms. I was very excited for it. And appreciate him bringing back a title to Los Angeles. But I'm not going to say it's like, no, get off my lawn. He's going to definitely be in. Now, if he wins these titles that we're talking about, he's definitely going to be, one of the best Lakers. That's no debate in my eyes. Like, yeah, he's definitely going to be in the conversation, but he's not going to eclipse the Mount Rushmore with the stapled storied players that I had mentioned that, he just can't do it because he doesn't have enough time to do it. That's the thing. I mean, if he's able to play into his 40s and he's a Laker for 7 to 8 years and, bangs off four titles, then we can be like, hey, this guy is possibly one of the best Lakers, but all these other guys are legendary and they were, most of them grew up there and played most of their careers there. So that's the only thing I'm saying. It's a tough list to follow. It's like, you can do it with the 49ers, like how you have Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, any of these legendary teams. You can do it with the Celtics. are you going to put some of these guys with the faces of the franchise that are still faces of the franchise till this day?
I want to ask one more. Go ahead, Mike, and I want to ask a question too.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, real quick. So I'm going to meet you about halfway, okay? At least, and I understand, like, you're not trying to get me to agree with you or compromise with you. We're just kind of talking, sharing opinions, right? So,
absolutely.
But wins a couple championships, but that's part of the fun, like the little banter. So, Gail Goodrich loved him as a Laker, okay? Let's be honest. So I'm going to say I would put LeBron James
above Gail Goodrich if that's what you're okay, thank, like. Definitely, thank you, he wins. Like, yeah. I'm just saying, now, Jerry West.
Here's my point.
Kareem, Magic, Kobe. Mount Rushmore. Yeah.
That's where I'm trying to go.
Yep, exactly.
Kareem, Jerry West, Magic, Kobe.
Exactly. Yep.
Kobe, West, and Baylor. Kareem, Magic, Kobe, West, and Baylor. So I'm giving five instead of four.
Absolutely.
Those are my five that I don't know.
You can't squeeze five. Mike, you can't squeeze five. It has to be four. You got to take somebody out of here. Who are you now? It's only four heads. You can't put five up there. Somebody has to go.
Oh, that's tough. I'm gonna go with Kobe though. He's up there. I'm gonna go with Magic. He's up there. And I'm gonna go with Cap. It's interesting because he played so much in Milwaukee. He's the one I thought about, but I can't take him off. And then I'm gonna go with Jerry West just because he's the logo, and I'm gonna be sad to take Elgin off because Elgin was that dude, right? So. But even those four,
right.
And then what I will say is you take the fifth guy, the honorable mention, and then the best LeBron can do, in my opinion, is get to six in Laker history.
So this is the question I want to ask. Wait, hold on. You guys, see, this is Sports City. I apologize, because like I told you, I'm three Laker criminals. Like, they are not – they're trying to take over. This is bad. They're taking over the show. But I do want to ask a critical question. Since you guys do have a lot of turnover in this discussion about LeBron being a Laker and what he's able to do there, whether good or bad, does he retire a Laker or does he go to another organization or does he go back home to Cleveland? And a lot of people are thinking that he's sticking around for his son. Is he going to have his son be able to get to the Laker land or is this going to be a Cleveland move? Like, how do you figure it's ending for LeBron? Elijah, I'll get you back in here. Your thoughts, Elijah.
Elijah, your thoughts on how
LeBron, the way he ends his career, do you think he finishes in L.A. or do you think he finishes somewhere else?
Man, I think it all just depends on his, like, what happens in his last season on his contract. I think it just all depends on, like, what he does in the playoffs or whatever. But I don't think that he'll retire in L.A. I don't see Brown retiring out there. It's too much going on out there for him.
Okay. I think it depends on how he develops and how the draft falls. I think that LeBron is still, we've all heard about it for a while, if the ability or the chance exists for him to play with his son, he wants to have that moment or make that moment in history. And so if the opportunity comes up to do that, I don't care if they got to play their home games in Antarctica. LeBron is going to try to make that happen. Now that he's out there, if it wasn't for that, I think he might go ahead and retire in L.A. And I think the only thing that will prevent him from retiring in L.A. will be the chance to play next to his son. And anybody that doesn't understand that and doesn't understand family, I'm not sure what to tell them.
Fair enough. Eric, I know you wanted to say some stuff, too, before we get away from the topic. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
No, I think you just hit the nail on the head perfectly. Barring him not being able to play with his son in L.A., I see him leaving to whatever team, you know, his son gets, you know, drafted to, or however he gets there, at least going to that team for 1 year. I don't know if LeBron James is sold on actually playing with him on the same team or actually being in the league at the same time playing with his son. So that'll play a factor too. If he's okay with just being in the league playing at the same time with his son, then I think hands down, you know, yeah, he is going to retire a Laker, and he'll have his jersey hung up there in the whatever they call Cleveland's arena now. If it's still what is their arena's name now? They're in Cleveland.
I think it's the Q, right? Isn't it the Q?
Yeah. Okay, it's still the Quicken Loans Arena. Yep. Yeah, he's definitely going to have his jersey there, and he'll definitely have his jersey hanging up in L.A. and possibly even in Miami. I don't know. It was kind of a rocky breakup there with him leaving. So I don't know. But, you know, he can't take away what he did there in Miami either with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. So this is a guy that's going to have his jersey potentially in three different arenas. But the question at B, I do see him retiring a Laker unless, you know, he wants to play with his son, and he's not able to do that on the Lakers.
Okay, we do have a caller in queue calling out of the 703. Aaron, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here, man. I popped in on this Laker talk, and I think I'm about to get sick, but what's up?
Let me actually give you some home cooking. At least one of these Laker fans is from Houston, so at least you're doing okay. You're somewhat okay. At least you get some Houston mentality in the building, so you get some of that.
Wow.
Yeah. But your thoughts to the discussion, or we'll move away unless this is a hot dish. Like, I don't know if we stay here.
You know, honestly, man, everybody kind of said what I wanted to say. You know, as far as, you know, LeBron James being on the Mount Rushmore of Lakers, you know, supremacy, I don't think he eclipses that mark, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, especially since you can only put four heads up there. Now, if you want to, you know, alter the amount of heads you put up there, then case can be made for LeBron being up there. But if you're just going to put four, unfortunately, I just don't see a pathway from getting there. So I agree with what, you know, everybody's saying about that. And as far as him returning the Laker, my man who just spoke before me hit the nail on the head. You know, LeBron James's contract is set to expire when his son is set to be a rookie in the league. So LeBron James can literally pick and choose where he ultimately wants to go. And I think a lot is going to be predicated upon where his son, you know, gets drafted. So, again, everybody said what I was going to say, so we can keep it moving.
So we'll keep it moving. Funny enough, right? I'm glad I'm surrounded by Laker fans, because the next game we go into, it was a game that played and took place in the state of Texas in a city called Dallas. And back-to-back matchup, the Mavericks have taken care of business up against this Los Angeles Lakers team, winning by 15, in which they were tied going into the fourth, and the Mavericks win this matchup 108-93. I want to see how you guys feel about the loss yesterday, in which my little cousin took care of business. Dwight Powell goes off for 25-9 and an assist, in which the more impactful player for the Lakers was Dennis Schroeder, 16 points, 10 assists, and 4 rebounds, in which a lot of people are, let me just say it correctly, questioning Dennis Schroeder as a Laker moving forward. Is he going to be the guy at the point, I guess, after this season? I think even if they do win a championship, is Schroeder still there? I want to see how you guys feel about it. Aaron, you just got here, so your thoughts on it. The Lakers losing a back-to-back matchup up against Mavericks. They've lost four out of their last five. They may start sliding down if they can't turn this around. They said that LeBron is expected back soon, too. So your thoughts.
Yeah. You know, honestly, man, this is more about the Dallas Mavericks than the Los Angeles Lakers, if you ask me. This is a Dallas Mavericks team that is really scrapping and clawing to stay in playoff relevancy. They don't really want to fall out and get, you know, slapped into that play-in tournament, that play-in game thing. So this is more honestly about the loss to the Dallas Mavericks than anything. The number one thing that I really think we need to understand is that without LeBron James, you know, the loss has a...
There we go. Still there?
He's cutting out.
You know, ultimate closers in Luka. So this is a guy who, you know, was pretty much held in check throughout the whole, you know, three quarters of the game and kind of erupted and got some contributing and help from his role player. KCP didn't play yesterday. So, you know, they got some contributing from other people. So this is more about Dallas than anything, and, you know, but at the end of the day, I'm not really focused on the Lakers sliding or what's going to happen with the Los Angeles Lakers. You know, my thing is this: get healthy, get AD back acclimated, get him some more burn, you know, get him back in game shape, kind of get him mixing and, you know, meshing with, you know, Drummond, insert LeBron James back into the lineup, get, you know, all three of their horses kind of mixing and matching and kind of get right for this playoff run. To your second question, TP, when you spoke about Dennis Schroeder, I think it was a smart business move for Dennis Schroeder to turn down the deal and kind of see what the future may or may not hold for him long term. But I do like the fact that he was very aggressive yesterday. He was looking for a shot. He was, you know, in the paint, grabbing boards, doing some things. And I think that's going to be a help, not so much a hindrance to them going forward as they, you know, again, get right in and attempt to go on this run. If you're a Lakers fan, you know, again, I'm sitting here talking with a couple of them. You know, losing is never fun. Losing is something that you all don't do well. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, you're on the mend. You're getting some guys back. You're working some stuff out. And let's keep it a buck. Nobody wants to see this Lakers team come playoff time. I don't care if you're the number one seed at Utah Jazz. You do not want to see a healthy Los Angeles Lakers team come playoff time. So at the end of the day, losing to Dallas was frustrating, but you got to be right.
Timeless.
Yes, sir.
This just in, your cousin just got to the rim again, and the Lakers are slow in the defensive rotation, and I think he just scored again. Dwight Powell for two. That being said. For Laker fans, whatever you need to do, take a few deep breaths, go get your yoga mat, whatever is necessary. Anthony Davis looked a little better last night than he did the previous timeout. His jumper is still not quite there. He hit one late. But they were playing with rotations a little bit. I mean, Vogel had Gasol and Drummond on the court at the same time late in the game and didn't make any attempts to switch that. So I think some of this is playing rotation practice time. I think that Schroeder does, you know, he did get off a little bit last night. The one criticism that Schroeder got in some Lakers circles last night was it wasn't just tied going into the fourth. That game was tied down into the stretch run. And, you know, Schroeder did not take control of that team and help make sure those guys kind of were in those spots and kind of be that and kind of be that floor general. But when you have LeBron and every and other guys, he doesn't always have to do that. He can play on the ball, but, you know, LeBron is the guy with the high basketball IQ that's going to settle that team down. I think the story is more about the Mavericks, as she said, being able to get a couple of wins. They're probably going to be fine if they have everybody healthy. I mean, as far as, you know, we definitely didn't see the product that, you know, Dallas was closer to the product that they should look like in the playoffs than what the Lakers were over the last couple of games. Now, they didn't have KP last night. But Dallas, it was definitely more about Dallas. Lakers still figuring out the rotations, getting people back, and still kind of easing in. So
I'm not really concerned as a Lakers fan. Nobody wants to get blown out like 19-4 in the last 5 minutes of the game and lose by 15. But the team played competitive basketball on the road against a pretty good basketball team for, you know, 43 minutes of that game. And this is still AD rounding in shape, don't have LeBron back. And like I said, in the playoffs, you're not going to see Gasol and Drummond out there at the same time when neither one of them can get back on that rotation. And Dwight Powell will not be taking their lunch money like that in the fourth quarter down the stretch. I mean, he took their lunch money and he walked and he kicked in their door and ate their big piece of chicken at dinner last night.
And this is the crazy part, because he's been actually trying to find himself ever since the catastrophic injury that he had last year. And this is a breakout game up against a team that everybody around the nation is watching. So I want to see him continue to get this going, but not only does he have to play consistent, Porzingis has to play consistent to actually help Luka. Because I'm not going to lie, the pace that Luka's on, the Mavericks are going to burn Luka out by like year 10, year 12, like within that realm. Luka's doing a lot with minimal help, and he has pieces around him, but they aren't helping as they need to. Anybody else want to break down this game or have anything to say toward the Lakers losing this by close to 20?
Yeah, no, I wanted to throw out here that the Lakers are still, believe it or not, I know it's late to be saying this, but they are still trying to get their final tweak on what roster they want to roll with in the playoffs. You know what I mean? They got a log jam at the small shooting guard, small forward position. Ben McLemore has came in and absolutely been playing great, overachieving in my eyes. Yep, exactly. I was going to say, Sirius could attest to this. Yes, over there in Houston. He's been a really surprising piece. Talon Horton Tucker is turning it on. Of course, Caruso's in there. So KCP hasn't been playing, like the normal KCP that we've been used to this year. So it's going to be interesting to see. They're still trying to get this lineup ready for the playoffs. And then, bringing in Andre Drummond, seeing how he's going to fit in there. And then, of course, Anthony Davis. He played a little bit more minutes than I'd like to see him play yesterday. He played close to 30. But nonetheless, he was able to handle it and starting to look a little bit better. So, I'm not putting too much stock into it because Sirius said it best. It doesn't matter if the Lakers what seed they finish. If you're playing this team healthy in the playoffs, it's going to be a problem. So, this is more for the Mavericks, like everybody said, for their playoff run.
In all fairness, though, before last night when he had to miss, KCP has started to right the ship a little bit and play a little bit better basketball in the last few games.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to know so they're a game and a half in front of the sixth seed. I'm wondering if they fall or not, or can the Lakers turn this around? I mean, four out of the last five is pretty troubling to me, because they were going back and forth. The Lakers are winning and losing. Like, that's, they were trading off games between winning and losing, and now this has become a very interesting situation with them losing a great amount of games, and they're getting Anthony Davis back. I'm wondering how they're going to deal with, like, his minutes restraint, and knowing that I think that they're trying to keep it around 15 or 20 right now. I don't know if they want to ramp it up, but I think that they have to be cautious to keep it low just because of how critical he is to this team. But if he's not out there on the floor, they still get to attack this Lakers team, and a lot of people are so high on Andre Drummond. I'm like, he's a great rebounder, but he's not – a great defensive player. Like, he's not one of those guys that contests shots at the rim or, stops bigs from scoring, because Joel Embiid was the one that got under his skin, and I don't know if he's shaking that off just as of yet. And offensively, like, there's still questions there other than him being that garbage man, getting those rebounds and putting them back. Like, Drummond has to figure himself out within his role, too. I know that there'll be additional possessions while he gets rebounds, but other than that, there's a lot to make up with this Lakers organization, and they have to do this on the fly with a Vogel coach that has to prove this to not only to the people in Lakerland, but also to the league right now, because they're basically bleeding in the water, and there's sharks around, especially in the Western Conference. but we will continue to move. The next matchup I have is the Timberwolves and the Jazz. The Timberwolves upset the Jazz, winning 101-96. Clearly, this is a situation where I feel like the Jazz need Donovan Mitchell back as soon as possible. They do have to watch after this ankle sprain. I think he's probably about a week or two out. But in a winning effort, Anthony Edwards goes off for 23-9 with 4 assists, and Bojan Bogdanović has a 30-point night up against the Wolves, but this is in a losing effort, especially being at home in Salt Lake City. I don't know if you guys have too much to add to this other than the Wolves playing a shocking amount of basketball, especially where I feel like they were in a situation to tank to be one of the top or the number one pick in the draft, even though the lottery may spell it differently. But this is stunning for the Jazz, that being one of the best defensive teams in the league, losing to probably the worst team in the league right now. This is a very questionable situation. Anybody like to add to this game before we get moving?
I'd like to touch on just Rudy Gobert. You know, he's a presence down there in the paint. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to beat a dead horse. Him and Shaq have gone back and forth on social media. Rudy Gobert gets paid like one of the best centers in the NBA would. You know what I mean? He's got that big money contract, and you know, putting up 9 points a game, and it's been pretty consistent for him. You know, it's rare for him to go off on and have a 20-plus point night. They're going to have to get a little bit more out of him if the Jazz are going to go far in the playoffs. He needs to increase his offensive ability. He's a good rebounder, good defender, but the guy needs to score more points. He's getting paid, you know, as a top five center in the NBA. So they need to get more production out of Rudy Gobert, you know, especially with Donovan Mitchell being out. I mean, he should have, as you know, Conley had 18, Bogdanović had 30, and after that, Jordan Clarkson at 15, and then the rest of the team had 8, 7, 9 points. So they're going to have to get more production with their star out. But this is another team, if they're firing on all cylinders, especially with Mitchell back, is going to be a tough customer in the playoffs. But they're definitely got to get more performance out of Rudy Gobert.
Okay, I think I heard somebody else trying to say something. If not, I'll continue to move.
Yeah, I was just going to say I agree with you on them having to get Donovan Mitchell back. I think that every team, no matter how good they are, loses a game or two that they shouldn't lose throughout the year. Still big ups to the job that Quinn Snyder and that team has done this year. Nobody would have picked them to finish atop the Eastern Conference, and they still might not, depending on how the rest of the year shakes out. But, you know, if they lose again tonight to the Timberwolves, then I think maybe there's a little bit more concerned out there on the Wasatch front. But right now, I'm you know, they just got to get Mitchell back. I agree with you.
So I'm gonna go ahead and jump in real quick. I agree with them getting Mitchell back, but I'm gonna say this: even if the Utah Jazz lose tonight, that like, we've all played sports here. Like, there's some teams that you don't match up well with. There's some teams that's got your number, and Utah Jazz are the number one current seed in the Western Conference. And, you know, we bottom feeders in the division like to get up for those big games. And like we were talking about with the Los Angeles Lakers about, you know, sharks and smelling blood in the water, you know, their superstar is hurt right now, and Donovan Mitchell. So we're asking, you know, people who don't do superstar stuff to kind of wake up and do superstar things. You know, we're not, you know, Bobo Bogdanović dropped 30 yesterday. He ain't had 30 points since he played college ball. You know, Mike Conley ain't, you know, start shooting the ball like that or whatever since he was in Memphis. So we're asking guys who, you know, typically don't do superstar type stuff to do superstar type things, you know. So, I mean, even if they lose, now, granted, I'm not picking them to lose two nights in a row, especially to a Timberwolves team, but even if they lose, again, this is about a feel-good story, in my opinion, for a team that's going to be in the lottery, not necessarily a mark or a knock on the Utah Jazz and what they've been able to accomplish this year, you know. So I'm just leaving it at that.
All Okay, so we'll move right into the next one. I do agree with you. I think the Jazz, if this is taking place in Salt Lake, which I think this is, I can't see the Jazz losing back-to-back, even though Cat is a problem. Anthony Edwards actually had a good game, and D'Angelo Russell closed out. I feel like they have a trio that they can make this work off of. Hopefully they can play the consistent ball, but we'll see. The next matchup I have are the Denver Nuggets winning their home game up against the Houston Rockets, 129-116 in a losing effort. DJ Wilson goes off for 25, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists. In a winning effort, Michael Porter Jr. puts up 39, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists. I don't know how long they want to sit on this guy, but if he has this type of potential, and I can't really rain too much on this because it is up against the Rockets. The Rockets, I feel like they're not only tanking, but they're just putting out whoever they can to try to play ball at this point, and just try to hang on to at least probably one of the worst records in the league to try and get as many, balls as possible in the lottery. Anybody want to add to what Michael Porter was able to do in this game, or is this just about the team that he matched up against? And also anything that they like to say toward the Nuggets or the Rockets in general in this matchup, I'll throw this one around the kitchen and see how you guys feel about it.
I love Michael Porter, man. I mean, the issue has been his health. He's grown and matured into that dude, into a player. Loves his upside. I think we still haven't seen the best of him, and he's continuing to round in the shape. And with all due respect to your comment about Minnesota earlier, I think the Houston team is the worst team in the league right now.
Now that I looked at the record, you're right. I looked at the record, and Houston does have the worst record in the league. I didn't know it was that bad because I have a Rockets fan here. So I try to be respectful, but they come for me. That, Mike, I'm just letting you know that not only is it Laker fans that come for me, I even have a Rockets fan who happens to be family to me that comes for me too. And I don't do it, but it happens. It happens. So, Aaron,
I'd like to throw something out there, Timeless. This is something that I think we're going to see for a long time in this league. Michael Porter Jr. is going to be a stud. There's no doubt about it. The Denver Nuggets, if they did not lose Jamal Murray, this team could take on the Lakers with, they acquired Aaron Gordon, JaVale McGee. That was two pieces to put them to elevate them for this team to compete for a championship, which I was really concerned as a Laker fan because the Nuggets always play us hard. We saw what happened last year. And adding these guys, the Lakers lacked that, in my opinion. So, this was a team that was going to contend for an NBA title. They lost another one of their role players last night, Will Barton. So we'll see. But the Nuggets are another team, that nobody's going to want to play in a seven-game series, even without Jamal Murray, especially if they can get Michael Porter playing as he is right now. This team's going to be tough, and they still have a chance.
Okay, so Mr. Simmons, I hear you trying to say that. There you go. Go ahead. I'll let you speak.
So two things. First and foremost, we were on this network, I believe it was Wednesday of last week, and we were speaking about, who would honestly step up and fill the void that Jamal Murray left. And I think all of us that was here, really looked at Michael Porter Jr. to be that guy. And moments like yesterday, now granted, my squad is the worst squad in the league. We play zero defense. We are playing guys who, were at Walmart, bagging groceries the day before. John Wall, he's playing well and whatnot. But the team that you currently see out there, will not be the team that we feel next season. However, with that being said, you still got to put the ball in the bucket. You still got to, kind of get yourself in the shape. And Michael Porter Jr. Is going to be that guy who Joker looks to kind of get this thing going and kind of, be his Robin to his being Batman, so to speak. So salute to them. The Rockets are playing tough. I give them that. They're playing tough, and they're making me mad while they're doing it. You know what I'm saying? I am never for tanking. I'm never for losing games. I am a competitor. I will fight you and play you for a stick of Juicy Fruit bubble gum because that's just how I was brought up. But with that being said, big picture, You know what I'm saying? The more losses we get, the more we're able to potentially get that, you know, get a higher draft pick and, you know, kind of really start the full-fledged rebuild. So I'm going to need all my Rockets players to not play well. John Wall, go ahead and call it a day. Going to sit your ass down somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Don't hurt yourself. We're going to need you next year. You know, Eric Gordon, man, go. Yo, I don't want to win another basketball game. I don't want to win another basketball game. Unless it's against OKC or
I could beat Utah
and OKC. Those are the only two teams I'm allowing us to beat. Everybody else is going to lose.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Not against us. Don't do that. Please don't do that. Not against us. Okay.
You already know.
The last game I have, and it's the talk around this area like crazy. The Knicks beat the Raptors 120-103. I don't even know what to do because I am not a Knicks fan. I deal with this every single year, and it's like the Knicks fall apart every year. And this year, they are playing some incredible basketball where I got to, like, tip my cap. The run that they're on, they're on a 9-game winning streak. And what I could not wait to see is I don't know how Thibodeau's doing it, but I'm cautiously watching it. He's letting Derrick Rose close, and the Knicks play harder when Derrick Rose is out there in the fourth quarter. There's something about this team right now that when Derrick Rose is in the fourth quarter, they all go hard. Like, I watched it last, especially watching them against the Raptors. And they couldn't stop him. His crossover, he was rocking them this week with that crossover and that floater finish. He was killing them yesterday. Listen, Julius Randle in a winning effort, 31 points, 10 rebounds, and 1 assist. In a losing effort, Fred VanVleet goes off for 27, 5 rebounds, and 11 assists. I don't know where this stops at. If the Knicks could continue to play confident, this is actually questionable. If the Knicks could actually storm into the top four, I don't know if they'll get there.
No.
And stay there,
no.
But this is interesting. No. Eastern Conference wise, mm-hmm. I already hear some flickering. I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
Mm-mm. The Knicks ran off this win streak, impressive, especially because they had just lost a few games before. If they do get into the top four, it's going to be because of injuries to guys like Trae Young. You know, LaMelo having gone down in Charlotte. Those guys have. Both those teams have had really good years. The Knicks can't play with the teams that they would match up right there, though, over the course of a long series. That being said, big ups to Tom Thibodeau and to Julius Randle and those guys because the Knicks have not been this relevant this late in the season for a long period of time. So, I mean, I think MSG fans and fans of the Knicks can be more cautiously optimistic than they've been in a long time, but you know it's a success if you get out the first round, and I think you're going to be hard pressed to do that. I think that they just you accept your success and know that your franchise took a step forward and see what happens as you continue to move forward. I don't think they'll be in the top four. I don't think they'll get out of the first round, but I do think that because of the way Tom Thibodeau coaches. There'll be a problem, and they'll frustrate somebody in that first round. But eventually they'll bow to defeat and sneak them back home for the offseason.
Wow, Mr. Negative, jeez, you woke up like this? See? Okay, so they are in fourth.
Wow.
They're in fourth. They're a half a game in front of Atlanta. I don't know what Atlanta we see, especially with Trae Young being injured. They may continue to slide. Boston is a game and a half back. I don't know what Boston we see because they're up and down too. Boston can end up catching them, but right now they're comfortable in fourth with the teams that are around them right now, in which they can potentially have home court advantage in the Garden up against how it looks right now, the Hawks, where the Hawks are questionable. The Knicks may potentially be a fourth seed, and not only be a fourth seed, could potentially be a second-round team in the Eastern Conference playoffs. The playoffs? You just heard Jim. Are you kidding me?
Playoffs?
The playoffs?
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? Oh, my goodness. This New York
they don't want,
talk
they don't
is
want
like
that
it's
smoke
even...
with...
All right, go ahead.
That is a feat for the NBA in itself, folks. The New York Knicks have returned to the playoffs.
I know. Wait, Mike, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, they better hope they get Atlanta. They don't want that smoke with Boston in the first round. And they don't want to draw Miami. I'm not sure where Miami exactly falls right now in those standings.
I'm gonna let you know. Miami is seventh right now, so they're in the play-in. Boston is sixth, Atlanta is five, New York is four. They're far. New York is four games back from Milwaukee, so they can't catch the third. Well, they could. It depends on if Milwaukee start messing around. If the Knicks get to three, I'm gonna pass out.
How far is Miami?
They are two games back. It's that close, too, actually. That is close.
The Knicks could still – I mean, you're right, they could be a four. Atlanta's going to slide too much. They're not going to get that first-round matchup with Atlanta. But the Knicks could also slide, too. The Knicks could just as easily find themselves in the play-in by the time the season's over.
If the Knicks get to the third seed and Milwaukee start messing around, I'm going to pass out.
Listen, if the Knicks make the third seed, I will walk from Des Moines to Connecticut and visit you barefoot.
Don't do it. It's not worth it. I'll pay for the ticket. I'll get you the fly. Brutal, man.
Real quick, I promise I'll wrap this up. I like what the Knicks are doing. Like, I respect Tom Thibodeau as a coach. I love Mr. Julius Randle. He was drafted by Laker Nation, right? So I love them, man, but they're not contenders yet, man. They're pretenders that are in the playoffs. They can smell themselves a little bit. They can pat themselves on the back. Just be careful not to dislocate their shoulder because they haven't quite risen to the level that a lot of Knicks fans want to think. The Knicks always overhype themselves. They're not quite ready yet, and they better hope they get Atlanta in the first round if they have any chance of advancing out.
I'm not saying that they're contenders. I'm just saying the run that they're off to right now, please, I don't want anybody thinking I'm saying that they're a contender. It's just interesting to see the Knicks are playing real good ball at the end of the season. Like, I can't even overtalk that and people that know me here, I'm not a Laker fan or a Knicks fan. I come at both of these organizations the worst. So it's pretty interesting. So we are at the tail end of the show. I do want to get you guys' thoughts on KD returning today for Brooklyn up against the Phoenix Suns in the Barclays. I'll see how you guys feel about that upon closure as well. But I'm thankful for everybody that definitely stopped in here. I will come to you first, Mrs. Jones. Give me a plug, close out, shout out, and also your thoughts on Kevin Durant returning to the Brooklyn Nets.
Hey, what's up, guys? I really enjoyed the show today, Ty. I don't have any KD coming back. I'm just ready for the playoffs. I know he might ball out maybe, but I'm just ready to see what he got in the playoffs. All this regular season stuff is just like a good for conversation, I'd say.
Yeah, just like LeBron James, I know. It's just good for conversation. I'm going to do the same thing to him, too. I got her, because she thinks she's slick. But she know. I'll be talking to you in a few minutes. I'll be in your face in a few minutes. Just you wait. Mr. Harvey, thank you for stopping by the brunch. Give me a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote, and also your thoughts on Kevin Durant returning to the Nets today.
Well, thanks for having me again. I enjoyed chopping up with everybody in this space. I look forward to being back and continue to be part of it. Just big up to you, Tom. You always know how to cook and how to lead a ship, and I'm always continuing to learn from you in much respect. Kevin Durant coming back today. I'm curious to see if he's on any kind of minutes restriction, but he does. To me, the biggest thing is watching to see how this Phoenix team plays on the road. With Durant coming back, you know, there's all this talk about the and so I'm sorry because I know a lot of people are going to have other things to say about Durant, so I'm just taking it down a little bit different road. You're always hearing about how vulnerable Utah and Phoenix are as the top two seeds in the West and how they're kind of getting undervalued. So I'm curious to see how Phoenix responds to Durant coming back and just, you know, how Phoenix presents and performs on the road today and how they represent the Western Conference.
Okay, and last but not least, Big Easy, you already know what to do. Shut it down, and your thoughts on Kevin Durant returning to the net.
Yes, sir. I'm glad that the captain is back. It's good to have you back, Timeless. Great show today. The Durantula is back. Everybody get your popcorn. This Nets team is going to be fun to see what happens in the playoffs, so be sure to check that out. Check us out, sportscitychefs.com, the blogs, the merchandise, the shows. We have a lot of good stuff coming up for you guys. We've got the ballpark barbecue along with the baseball buffet, the two baseball shows that we'll have, so everybody check those out. Everybody have a blessed day. Thank you to all the listeners.
Hey, we got new shows that I'm finding out about. Well, what's going around this picture, man? The draft is coming up, too. We'll have a draft special coming up this week also. I'm back in the saddle, too. Got to get things cooking in here as well as in the club also. SportsCityChefs.com, like Eric already told y'all. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Sports City, Chefs. Sports City, Chefs. Chef, Sports City, Chefs. Chef, Sports City, Chefs. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Chefs. Chef, Sports City, Sports City, Chefs. Chef.
Woo! Connecticut.